This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
St. Louis is home for conservative talk.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
All right, we have one more hour to go, and then I'm off for a week. Have I mentioned that I'm off for a week, Sue? I don't know if I've impressed upon the audience and you.
I wonder if Fred is, too.
Fred is off for the week. But look, Mike Elam's going to hang with you next week. It's going to be fun. We're going to get all together again after the holiday. Thursday and Friday, everyone's off. So Thanksgiving, we're going to do some best ofs. There's some great conversations
we've had
even in the past couple of weeks that will roll back on Thursday and Friday. A little bit later this hour, you know, we spent time on the Jussie Smollett story yesterday. Rafer Weigel, who was in Chicago when all that happened, he was doing television here for a while in St. Louis, and we got to know him. And then he hooked us up with Gloria Rodriguez. Gloria's like one of my favorite people.
Oh, she's fantastic.
She is fantastic, and she was busy yesterday. She couldn't join us. She is the attorney for the Osundario brothers, the ones that were hired to do the MAGA hit
by Jussie.
On Jussie, right? Yes. Well, of course, he's innocent. So
yeah,
after
of
yesterday.
Course, yeah.
But she's also the one who produced this documentary that's on Fox Nation, and it's really good. So she's coming up. We have Tim Summer, our music journalist friend. We're going to talk a little music. There's a new Fleetwood Mac documentary that they're working
on
Apple TV Plus and some other things as well. And right now we have Charlie Metzner in the studio. He's the founder and current president of the St. Louis Hero Network. We're going to find out a little bit about that, and there's a pub crawl coming up. You also have some connection to Guns N' Roses as well. Charlie, how are you? Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Whoop, I don't think I have the right mic on. There we go. Let's try that. Testing, you there?
I'm here.
All right, and you have your daughter in the room with us, too. And you're very, I always like it when parents are in the room with their kids, because she was standing outside the studio. I said, hey, have her come in. And now I can already tell you're visibly nervous that she's going to do something that you don't want her to do, but she's going to be fine.
No, she's a trained actress. That's what she wants to be.
Liliana, are you going to talk on the radio or not?
Hello.
Say hello, St. Louis. There you go. You did great. Charlie, tell me about the Hero Network. What's this all about?
So I started the St. Louis Hero Network with a couple other city firefighters about 6.5 years ago, two which are military veterans as well. And the idea was to promote their businesses, promote local first responder and veteran-owned businesses here locally. So what we do is we promote right now 214 first responder and veteran local owned businesses here in St. Louis. So it's kind of like an Angie's List or Home Advisor, but only using first responders and veterans here
right.
in St. That's Louis.
That's a good
area.
Way to explain it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
That's the best way to explain it.
So if we would go, kind of walk us through the process. You go to a website and then
correct.
You can look and you can cross search and find people that might be able to help you with different odd jobs, et cetera.
Correct. Well, I mean, it's not just service industry either. It's sales. Any job or any occupation that first responders and veterans would have is on there. So car sales. I mean, anything you can think of is on there.
See, that maybe that's where I was a little confused. I didn't know it went beyond that.
So any business.
So what's the practical application of someone using it? Like even somebody listening right now, if they're looking to hire someone, they could go on that website and they can see if someone matches the skill set that they're looking for that's also a first responder or has background in that?
Correct. I mean, the idea is to, you know, there's bad eggs everywhere. But with going with somebody that's a first responder veteran that served a country, served a community, obviously they have some built-in character and integrity that might be found, you know, anywhere. Who do you want around your family?
Right,
even around your pets? You want somebody, a random person on Craigslist, or you want somebody that, you know, has served the currently served the community or did in the past or their country?
Is this something that exists in other cities as well? Is this a national effort, or is it just here?
I was trying to like cut and paste a little bit.
Yeah,
but I wasn't able to. I wasn't able to find anything in the country that replicated what we're doing. So our mission,
that's amazing.
The best way to describe it is it's allowing it's connecting our first responders and our veterans to their community, and allowing our community to support them and their families by promoting these 215 businesses and offering a marketplace on that website for education, employment, and events for first responders, veterans, and the public.
I can't believe
it's
it.
A great idea.
I mean, you probably don't have time on your hands, but that seems like it would be worthy to take that effort nationally, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it. I think it works better in a smaller blueprint. We've been in discussion and bringing to Kansas City here on Network because. And the logo is awesome because you can have the Space Needle there instead of the arch. You can have all kinds of different things. It can be replicated in different ways.
I'm on the website right now, and it's very user-friendly. So you go to stlheronetwork.com, right?
Correct.
STL, and it shows all the categories: advertising, marketing, public relations, events, entertainment, handyman services, insurance services. You got everything listed here. Landscaping services. Look, when I was complaining about not cut my lawn last spring and not wanting to do it myself, I could have gone to the Hero Network, right, Sue?
Yeah, you could have.
Figured something out that way. You're having a pub crawl, right, coming up here in December?
Yeah, so on our website, if you go down a little bit farther or further, you could see our featured events. So we have Guns N' Hoses, the 12 Bars of Charity, which is coming up December 14th, which you just spoke of. And we have a bourbon for Backstoppers, which is a bourbon raffle we have until December 8th. So we'll go into the 12 bars. So 12 Bars of Charity is December 14th. It's 8 nonprofits. I'm extremely humbled and proud that we're next to some of these amazing nonprofits. And it's a competition. So this year we are Team Black.
Okay,
so we're red on black. No, red on black's never been done before. And I was just like, it's a winning color. Because a lot of people, as much as you want to think they support nonprofits, some people just choose it on the color, especially with the demographic. Demographic being like 21 to 30. So
do they really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
who knew? The research
is news to me.
Yeah, the research is interesting.
Yeah.
So I mean, we're there with Stray Rescue, Young Kids for Friends of Cancer, you know, Gene Slay's Boys and Girls Club, Make a Wish, St. Jude, ALS. I mean, all of them are worthy causes. I mean, right now we're ranked fourth. We've always kind of sat in third and fourth. Stray Rescue kind of wins every year, but this year's first is a first where they're in second place to young kids with Friends of Cancer.
So how is it determined? The winner is determined on the money that's raised, or are there other factors?
Correct. It's how many sweatshirts are bought under that person's flag.
Oh, okay. I got you.
So we're Team Black, and like Young Kids Friends with Cancer is like Columbia Blue.
Okay. Awesome.
I don't remember what Stray Rescue is. I try to forget.
Well, because you're in competition.
Well, yeah.
Against them.
Yeah. Everybody loves puppies.
I've never done... Sue and I don't partake in the adult beverages. I used to many years ago. I've never done a pub crawl, but I know that they're very successful and popular as well.
This one has never stopped growing. We'll see if this year beats last year, but it's never stopped growing. It gets bigger and bigger every year.
Do people take... Because I don't know how this works. Do they take buses and stuff like that?
So, yeah.
Shuttles?
So, with your sweatshirt is your ticket. So with your sweatshirt, you get between 2 and 6, you get shuttled to all these bars. I think there's 47 bars, and all of them are participating. And you get drink specials and shuttle rides to each one of the bars. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, people just want to be a part of it, part of something bigger than themselves, kind of like the Hero Network.
STLHeroNetwork.com. Well, we got to talk about Guns N' Hoses because we've been promoting that. And we had Greg Brown in a couple of days, who is the fire chief.
I know him well.
Yeah, he's great,
great man.
Down in Eureka. Have you ever fought? Your wife has fought, we hear, right?
My wife has fought 5 times. She was the first professional fighter ever to fight in Guns N' Hoses. And she holds a record for the most fights of a female, which is
so
5.
You won't mess with
That's
her at
great.
All. Right? She
People
can kick
always
your ass,
say that, but
she
never gets really mad. She's pretty calm.
Really?
When she gets mad, she don't say anything.
But people, like, this is the thing that's amazing. Like, this is the competitors, they take it very seriously. They train, they, you know.
Oh, my God.
They focus, they mentally focus.
to get out there, put those gloves on, and fight for the families who lost someone in the line of duty, is there's no bigger accomplishment or honor.
And to do it in front of, what, 19, 20,000 people at a sold-out Enterprise
Center?
You're
pretty much right,
18 to 20,000
people.
That's insane, really. Yeah. That's got to be overwhelming. Well, we're going to air that here on 97.1. Fox 2 is going to cover it. We're going to air the broadcast here as well. Golden Oak Lending, T.R. Hughes Homes, bringing that possible. Well, thanks for coming in and sharing the word about this and for the Hero Network as well, because it wasn't something, if it was on my radar, I'd maybe forgotten about it. STL Hero Network. Network.com. Are you going, the whole family going to Guns N' Roses?
Yeah, we raised last year, the St. Louis Hero Network raised $71,000. Hopefully this year with that bourbon raffle I was talking about, we can raise over $100,000.
Now, you want to guide people into the bourbon raffle?
So the bourbon raffle, the same way you can find out those other two events we were talking about, it's under our featured events. So you go to STLHeroNetwork.com.
Awesome.
And you'll find, you know, a way to register for the bourbon raffle as well.
Liliana, you think you're going to fight at Guns N' Roses one day?
Maybe,
she says. You got to get on that mic, though. You have to learn the actress skills and get right on the mic and answer that question and say, yes, I am going to fight like my mommy did, right?
Yes, I'm going to fight like my mommy.
There you go. That was excellent. Thank you guys for coming in. We really appreciate it. Have a great Thanksgiving. Thank you, Liliana and Greg. Greg, good to meet you.
Thanks,
I appreciate it. Take care.
Please, we got Tim. Go and do it.
That's right. Thank you, Liliana. We got Tim Summer coming up on music next. And then Gloria Rodriguez, who will react to the Jussie Smollett news from yesterday. She represented the Osundario brothers. It's all coming up, plus an audio cut of the day. Well, I love Fleetwood Mac, and it makes a great bumper. This one does in particular all the time. But there's some connection to the Fleetwood Mac that we're going to talk about here this afternoon. Movie-wise, we welcome to the show, back on this Friday afternoon, Tim Summer, music journalist, former record executive. He contributes to the Rock and Roll Globe website. He was the original guy that signed Hootie and the Blowfish. And along those lines, Mr. Summer, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing wonderful. It's great to hear your voice. It's great to be back on the show. And happy Friday, and I hope you have a wonderful week off next week.
I am very much looking forward to it. And my kids, as you know, will be in town, and my new grandson. But you just got a pretty nice honor that I know that we had kind of traded some messages on about that little, I mean, it hardly sold any copies, Cracked Rear View, right?
Yeah, that's right. I received, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a platinum record. It's an object, sort of like a glass pyramid. Let's describe.
Yeah,
it
that's
that
a
way.
Good description, right?
That commemorates the fact that Hootie and the Blowfish's Cracked Rear View has been designated a double diamond record. Now, a double diamond record means that it's sold over 20 million copies. There are only 13 double diamond albums in history, and one of them is Cracked Rear View by Hootie and the Blowfish. And as you know, but your listeners may not, I used to work for a record company. And when I worked for that record company, Atlantic Records, I was an A&R person, and I signed Hootie and the Blowfish to Atlantic Records, and I helped them make Cracked Rear View. It was an underdog project that no one expected would do anything. In fact, there were such low expectations that the record label tried to jettison the band before the album was even finished. They said that the album wasn't worth releasing, and I fought for that and had an interesting ride with Hootie, and the record went on to be the record that Atlantic had wanted not to release, in which I put my foot down and I said, hey, if you do one thing for me, release this record. Ended up being the biggest selling album
That's
in
amazing.
Atlantic Records history.
By the way, Tim wrote a great book on this called Only Want to Be With You, The Inside Story of Hootie and the Blowfish, and you can check that out. That came out, was it last year or was it 2 years ago now?
It was about 2 years ago, and thank you very much for the plug. Though it was out, it is out in paperback now, only for about 6 months. So you can get it in paperback now. Only Want to Be With You, The Inside Story of Hootie and the Blowfish, by me, Tim Somer.
Did you say that there were only 13 of those double diamond? Just 13?
Wow. Wow, Tim.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
crazy.
There are 13 double diamond albums in history. There are no triple diamond, which means that nothing in history has sold. No one album has sold over 30 million records. Of course, there are bands like the Beatles, like Fleetwood Mac, who culminatively have sold 50, 60, 70 million records, but we're talking about single albums. No single album in history has sold over 30 million, and there are 13 that have sold over 20 million. One of those, Hootie and the Blowfish. And as I said last week, even though I haven't gotten any gold records or platinum records from the band in 25 years, I was very happy to receive this object in the mail commemorating this extraordinary achievement.
But what would be the modern-day comparison to Double Diamond or even platinum and, you know, gold? Because we do this differently with streaming now.
There is no comparison.
Right.
There is no comparison. I think that entire era is gone. I don't say that as a good thing or a bad thing. In fact, it's probably a good thing because I love the fact that streaming has made music so available, so readily available. You can hear anything you want to hear, no matter how obscure. You can pretty much just dial it up on your computer or your phone, and that's fantastic. But the art of reaching into your pocket, taking out your wallet, going to the record store, actually getting into your car or getting into your parents' car or borrowing your parents' car or borrowing your friend's parents' car and going to the record store, walking, browsing, finding the record you want, taking that record to the counter, saying, here is my $7.99, $8.99. I want that record. Man, do you remember that feeling? Do you remember that?
I loved it. I loved it. And it was
art of selection.
1980 was this time of year, and I was a depressed kid. I just moved here in 1979, and my dad said, let's go to the record store. It was Peach's Record on Manchester Road.
So, oh, yeah.
And I'm a thinking man, Tim. I think you appreciate that at this point. He says, any record you want. Well, of course, I'm going to hit him up for a double record, right? So I got The River by Bruce Springsteen, and I had never had a Springsteen record before. But that was my first one. I knew a little of the music from when I was in Chicago. I listened to WLUP, which was the station here. Casey was a little bit more, there was more Southern rock when I moved here to St. Louis, but he was starting to, you know, get a little bit bigger before Born in the USA. But that was, it was special to go and to look forward to that, to come into your room, to open the record, to look at the lyrics, to pop it on the turntable. That's just not replicated. Look, I'm a big fan of digital music, but you can't replicate that.
And I think a big difference is, you remember that art of selection gave you and your friends an identity. You were making a choice that said something about you when you took that money out of your pocket to buy a record. You said, this is who I am. This is the way I want my friends to know me. I'm going to take this album, and my friends are going to know me because they know that I am a Bruce Springsteen fan. They know that I am a David Bowie fan. They know that I am a Yes fan. They know that I'm a Pink Floyd fan because you made that selection. Now, that's largely gone now. And again, I'm all for the digital age. Again, it's made music something that even the most obscure, wonderful, strange music, for instance, you know, you can just think of anything you want and it's there. And that's a great thing. But what we have lost is that sense of identity, that sense, you know, this is a good way to put it. I think you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Finding your peer group because of the music you loved. I think that's gone.
Probably is, yeah. You know, I'd have to think through that one just a little bit.
Of course, there's the entire nation of Swifties, and that's fantastic. But think on a small scale level, you know, that idea that you only had 50 or 75 or 125 records in your collection. Each one of them had to say something about you. And when your friends came over, this is when you were in, you know, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th grade. When your friends came over, they would look through those records and they would think, or you would think, these records say something about me, and I want you to know that about me.
I have a friend from when I was, you know, I probably met him when I was 12 years old. His name is Greg Kruzek. He's up in the suburbs of Chicago. And a few years ago, he called me, and he gave me credit for his being a fan of The Police because he said that I didn't even remember this, but, you know, I guess I bought that record, one of the first records, and was into that. And he remembered that from, you know, 45 years ago, which I thought was interesting. I didn't know I had influence. I thought I only had influence on the radio when I played music, but I thought that was kind of interesting. Hey, we bumped in with Fleetwood Mac. Let's talk about this because I'm excited about this. I'm a fan of the band. There's lots of drama in this band. Unfortunately, we've lost a member, and then we also have, you know, Stevie and Lindsay hating one another, but this is a project that's on Apple TV Plus that's going to come out soon, and I'm quite curious about it. Your thoughts?
I'll tell you something interesting about Fleetwood Mac, very interesting about Fleetwood Mac. When you begin to study Fleetwood Mac, it's like discovering that your father had a family before he married your mother. And I'll tell you what I mean about
because
that.
Of the earlier records?
Wait, tell, oh,
well,
yeah.
Because of the earlier records, right?
Between 1967 and 1970, Fleetwood Mac, who were led at that time by a guitar player named Peter Green.
That's right.
Who formed the band. Fleetwood Mac were the most powerful white blues band in history. Not only that, they kind of invented heavy metal with songs like Oh Well or The Green Manalishi. They invented heavy metal. They were a tough, angry, just snarling, authentic blues band, in my opinion, better than the Rolling Stones, much better than what Eric Clapton was doing. Peter Green, in my opinion, and Peter Green, who was in Fleetwood Mac from 1967 to about 1970, and was the leader of the band from 1967 to 1970, Peter Green was the best white electric blues player in rock history. Now, most of the people who know Fleetwood Mac from Rumors or from Tusk or from anything in the Stevie Lindsey era don't necessarily know about their prior history as a blues band. So that's what I mean.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, because that, you know, you got Peter Green, then you got Bob Welch for a few years as well.
That's right. And not only that, between Peter Green leaving the band in 1970 and Buckingham and Nicks joining, I think in 1975, though it might be 1976, you have another extraordinary band featuring Bob Welch and an amazing, vastly underrated singer-songwriter named Danny Kirwan, with a K. Danny Kirwan is this extraordinary, exotic, sensitive singer-songwriter, and the records that he made with Fleetwood Mac, specifically a record called Bare Trees, is one of Fleetwood Mac's best records. In fact, if you had to put a gun to my head, I would say that my two favorite Fleetwood Mac records are Bare Trees and Tusk. So you have this era of Fleetwood Mac where they're this extraordinary blues band, then they become this sort of sensitive, arty, pop blues band between 1970 and 1975. Then Buckingham Nicks joins, and that becomes the Fleetwood Mac that becomes a gigantic commercial force. Now, the story doesn't end there. How many people know this? In 1995, that's not that long ago, in 1995, Fleetwood Mac released an album called Time that didn't even make it into the top 200. It's the only Fleetwood Mac record that did not chart.
Really?
Because Fleetwood Mac at that point, they were, of course, John McVie and Mick Fleetwood, the greatest rhythm section in history, by the way, and I'm not saying that lightly. I really mean that. Mick Fleetwood on drums, John McVie on bass are the best rhythm section in history. And as much as we want to praise Stevie Nicks, as much as we want to praise Lindsey Buckingham, as much as we want to say wonderful things about the amazing Christine McVie, who I think was my all-time favorite member of Fleetwood Mac, as much as we want to say that, the fact is McVie and Fleetwood were the best bassist and drummer in a band in rock history. So anyway, where was I? I was going in 1995. McVie and Fleetwood are in the band. And at that point, their singers were Dave Mason and Bonnie Bramlett. And they made a record no one paid any attention to.
You're telling me that Dave Mason was singing with them in 1995?
What?
See, I did not know that at all.
Yeah.
That's fat. Now, so I would take you to 2003, and this is probably, I'd be curious to see what the hardcore Fleetwood Mac fans would say. They put a record out in 2003 called Say You Will, which I thought was a fantastic record. Still one of my favorite Fleetwood Mac, and it's really kind of underrated when it comes to what they did in their catalog. Yeah.
Tim, is the one that you're talking about, what'd you say, it's called Time, is that one good? Have you listened? Do you like it? What is your opinion?
It's not bad. The fact is, anything with a, I'll be honest, anything with John McVie and Mick Fleetwood on is worth listening to. That's how good they are. My whole point here being that of all of the bands, and I mean this, I don't think there's a band that has a more complicated, diverse, interesting history. Now, of course, I haven't seen this documentary yet. I hope they go into all that. I hope it's not just one big Buckingham Nicks love fest.
Yeah, and I do too, and I don't know. It's Frank Marshall.
An interesting history.
It's the Spielberg people. It's Frank Marshall, Kathleen Kennedy that are doing this. So this is a big, big, you know, project. They don't have a release date. They basically just announced it, and they said that Frank Marshall is directing. So, you know, big names connected with this. You know it's going to be slick. But yeah, they got to get into some of the dissension amongst the ranks, right?
And I'm going to tell you a very interesting story. Think to yourself, why is a band called Fleetwood Mac? Because in 1967, Peter Green, who was already a very well-known guitarist in England, he was already known, had this enormous reputation as a blues guitarist, having originally played with John Mayall's Blues Breakers. In fact, he succeeded Eric Clapton in John Mayall's Blues Breakers. Peter Green had such a weird attitude about his own ego that people are saying, okay, Peter Green, put together your own band, call it the Peter Green Band. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to call it the Peter Green Band. In fact, I'll just name it after the bass player. I'll call it Fleetwood Mac. You know, Fleetwood being a famous car,
yeah.
Mac being for McVie. He wouldn't even allow the band, his band, to have his name. That's how strange Peter Green was. And Peter Green, in fact, famously, Peter Green kind of had a lot of mental issues. That's what caused him to leave the band in 1970. Peter Green famously once pulled a gun on his accountant.
I know that story. Yeah, I've heard that story.
He didn't want to get royalties anymore. He didn't think he deserved money for his music.
Yeah, he had some issues, there's no doubt. By the way, just a quick trivia question. I think you're going to be able to answer this.
You know what? If you want to take away one thing from this, I want your listeners to listen to either one of two songs, The Green Manalishi or Oh Well, both of which from the Peter Green era of Fleetwood Mac, with Peter Green singing and playing guitar, and tell me those songs just don't knock your socks off and have your sneakers fly off your feet with it.
I do love Oh Well. There was a band in the late 70s that covered that, and I loved the cover of it. Do you remember anybody that did that?
A lot of people covered it.
But hey, here's another, before I let you go here, trivia question. Bob Welch trivia question. What was the name of his first solo record, 1976? You remember that one?
Ooh.
Had an interesting cover, French Kiss. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And you know that Fleetwood Mac recorded the original version of, why am I blanking on the name of his big songs? That really big song of his.
Bob Welch's big hit? Well,
yeah.
he had Ebony Eyes, and he had, what was the other one that he had? There were a couple of them. Sentimental Lady was one.
Sentimental Lady.
Yeah.
The Fleetwood Mac version of Sentimental Lady is just dynamite.
I'll have to check that out. He did Goldust Woman,
too. There's a whole huge history, and all I'm saying is, I hope, again, the story of Fleetwood Mac is like finding out, wait, Dad, what's this family you have that you never told us about?
Well, I can't wait for this movie. Again, I don't think they're even close to release date. They just announced the project. Tim, as so often is the case with you, we always want more time, but I gotta wrap here because I'm up against the clock. But look, thank you so much for jumping on here. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Always a pleasure.
We know you're big fans and vice versa. I appreciate it. Sue, we got Audio Cut of the Day and Gloria Rodriguez coming up.
St. Louis is home for conservative talk.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
Well, it's always fun to talk music with Tim. I love doing that. For a Friday, it was perfect. But yesterday, Sue, we were trying to get Gloria Rodriguez on the show, who is the attorney for the two brothers who were paid to attack Jussie Smollett. You remember that happened, right, a couple years ago?
And that's when we started yelling the famous slurs he wanted us to yell. And then that's when I threw the first punch at him. And then I threw him to the ground. He wanted it to look like he fought back. That was very important for him.
That is the audio from the Fox Nation documentary that our friend Gloria Rodriguez, who is the attorney for the Osundario brothers, who is with us this afternoon, she produced that documentary. We wanted to get her take on everything that happened yesterday with the Illinois Supreme Court. Gloria, welcome back. How are you?
Oh, man, Mark, it's good to see you. Well, through the radio.
Yeah, that's all right. I feel like we're seeing each other for sure. It's been a little while. You know, it's funny, and this is a true story. Earlier this week, weird things go through my mind, and I was actually thinking about this case, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I think that's still hanging out there, and lo and behold, the Illinois Supreme Court must have felt that or something, and they ruled on this. So what's your reaction? Because I heard his attorney basically say that, you know, he's innocent. This proves that he's innocent, right?
Yeah, no.
Not at all.
I heard that, too. I saw Uche's press conference, and all I could think was that he kept saying Jesse didn't get his due process rights. He didn't get his due process rights. And it's like, look, Kim Fox gave him a sweetheart deal. He got something that almost no other defendant gets, which is, go do some community service at your own liking over the weekend and give us your bond, and you don't have to make an admission of guilt. And you're all square on 16 felony counts. We'll drop the whole thing. I mean, come on. Nobody gets that kind of deal. Nobody, except Jesse.
So then how did the court rule this way, in your opinion? I mean, I guess they're really not, even though his side wants to say they're ruling on guilt or innocence, they're not doing that whatsoever. They're just saying that there was this deal that was cut and that because of that, there shouldn't have been a trial. Is that essentially the bottom line of what the message was?
Well, the opinion that was written, so there was a couple justices, it was either two or three that didn't participate in the final ruling. But for the ones that did, I think it was five, they were unanimous. Who wrote the opinion is a judge named Elizabeth Rochford. And Judge Rochford, just for your listeners, if any of them live in Lake County, she was a family court judge here. She actually opened a call where everyone on her docket had no attorneys. Like, this judge was so loved here in Lake County in the 19th Circuit. She's really, really good. And so she got elected recently to the Supreme Court of Illinois. And so her analysis takes the viewpoint that this was contract law, that the state attorney in this case, prior to Dan Webb being appointed, Kim Fox made an offer to Jesse to give up his bond and to do, you know, community service in quotation marks, and then he'd be done with no admission of guilt. And so the justice said that if the state attorney is going to make an offer, and if Jesse is going to rely on that offer and accept it, and to his own detriment, he should be allowed to enforce it. So the 32-page opinion basically analyzes contract law and basic contract, you know, breach of contract principles within the context of the state attorney being, you know, contracting with Jesse.
So is that sound legal analysis in your opinion or not?
Here's the problem when you ask me that, Mark, and I know you know me well, and I have a lot of different kinds of cases that I handle. I had the same exact situation with a case, a felony gun possession, and the state offered us alternative prosecution. And so my client goes down to 26 in California, he signs up for the program, starts doing it, and then we get a notice like, oops, the state attorney, again, Kim Fox was running the show at the time, they said, no, your client can't do this program because it's a gun charge. And so I went back to court and I filed the same exact thing that Jesse's attorneys did. Hey, this is a breach of the contract. My client accepted. There's no reason to pull it out from under him. And guess what the state attorney did in that case?
Well, I'm guessing they gave you back your deal or not. They didn't.
They never do that.
Okay. So in other words, but I mean, that's kind of the question's difficult because you're saying, look, there was a lane here, I guess, that they could have chosen, but they're not being consistent.
They're not being consistent. Number one, my client didn't have the money to go all the way to the Illinois Supreme Court and appeal this. So the status and the celebrity got him the sweetheart deal that he should have gotten in the first place. Now, the other thing, to Dan Webb's point, who was the special prosecutor. I mean, his firm did this all pro bono. It's in the millions of dollars. 2 years, they handled the appeal and everything, all pro bono. And they were saying, when you nulli prosequi, it doesn't mean that you're going to not charge. In fact, that's what it means. We choose to not prosecute, but we're not going to say that we can't ever re-prosecute, you know. And so that's where you're going to find a lot of the disagreement, because the court took a very, very narrow viewpoint that the words at the secret hearing that they did with Jesse way back when, I mean, we were surprised. I remember I came on your show and we're like, nope, we had no notice.
Yeah.
I was getting ready for spring break.
I remember that too. That's right. So then, Gloria, is this final at this point?
I mean, so I spoke to some of the people that worked on Dan Webb's team, and it doesn't seem like they're going to appeal it to the Supreme Court. So if there is no appeal taken from the Illinois Supreme Court and certiorari is not, however you say that word,
right.
Not by the Supreme Court, then I think we're done.
Well, maybe it's better that we're done, because we should have been done with this a long time ago. And, you know, the thing I think that drives a lot of people crazy wasn't necessarily just the incident. You know this. It was the effect that it had on the rest of the country and the way that this was portrayed as this hate crime when, from the very beginning, most of us knew it was a hoax.
Oh, you know what, Mark? It's sickening when you think about how much this one man really wanted to stick it to Trump and his supporters in a time where we're dealing with George Floyd, we're dealing with all this animosity between, you know, the different sections of politics in our country, and to just throw a blowtorch into a situation that's already filled with fumes. I mean, what the, you know. The
right, but here's the other thing. And
people
you
didn't
know,
need that.
You've learned this, too. Here's the other thing about it is when that was ignited by Jesse, it was gaslit by the rest of the media for the most part. Not the Chicago media, because I think the Chicago media sniffed this out relatively quickly. But the national media, of course, goes with this narrative. And they still haven't apologized for that, so I put a lot of the blame on them. But Gloria, it's always great to have you on. Luckily, I've not committed any crime, so I didn't have to call you into service for anything. But believe me, you're top of the list when I get in trouble.
Oh, anytime, Mark. I'm here for you.
Have a great Thanksgiving, Gloria. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, and you too. Take care of yourself.
That is Gloria Rodriguez. She's one of our favorites. She's
Love her.
A charmer, and she, you know, explains things so well. We were so lucky to be hooked up with her, and I have to thank Rafer Weigel, who was on yesterday, because he was so generous in giving Fred, you know, Gloria's contact and said, hey, you want to get, this is the person you want to get on. So that was great. All right, I have one more thing to do here.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So this is a 16-year-old girl at Riverside, California, in their school district out there, talking about how she might have to be in a locker room with biological males. And she just hands it here to this school board.
I'm a student at Martin Luther King High School, and I run on the cross-country team. So I'm constantly affected by these actions that have taken place this season. And I have been around the females and just my team in general, who have felt almost silenced to speak out about it because the whole LGBTQ is shoved down our throats, it is put in our face, and we live in a society where it is almost impossible to speak out on it without facing the repercussions of it. And I went myself to have a discussion with the head of the athletic director when nobody really felt comfortable enough to speak out, and I don't think it's fair, knowing Caitlin and knowing Taylor, to see their spots getting taken away, to see all these things being jeopardized for one person.
Now, this is happening more often. These young girls are getting very brave, thankfully. And look, this girl is 16 years old.
It feels as though that my school and the school district is choosing to support one person instead of the whole team and the whole school as a total. Like, it's not fair. It's not okay. I try my best not to put personal beliefs into it, but seeing this firsthandedly, seeing my teammates getting their spots taken for one person that's choosing to be a girl, It's not okay.
It's not okay. But here's,
it isn't.
No, it's not. So here's what happened here. Here's a little background. Her and another girl went to school with a message on their shirts that said, "Save girls sports. It's common sense. XX does not equal XY." And they treated it like it was Hitler or something. She explains it.
I've done my research. I've looked into the CIF rules, and I've looked into the NCAA rules. Two completely different things. And when I went into this meeting with the athletic director, I knew that. I knew that going into it, that teachers and coaches and people in the office can't speak on personal opinion. And then to see the athletic director turn around and tell my teammates that their shirts that say Save Girls Sports be compared to a swastika?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. That is not okay.
No, it's not. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
This little girl is a hero. One more here.
And it is not okay that I have to be in a position where I'm going to practice and having to see a male in booty shorts and having to see that around me. As a 16-year-old girl, I don't find that as a safe environment. I don't at all. And going into locker room and seeing males in there.
You go, girls. Yes. That's right. You go. And you know what?
I don't find going to the bathroom safe.
Yeah, she's still going on. My audio still went on there. But look, the country is behind these young women now, and they should have full faith and confidence that they are. She's a hero. There's a lot more of them out there inspired by Riley Gaines and others. Sue, have a great week. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
We'll talk a week from Monday, I guess.
Get more at 971talk.com.